It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
He indicated we will be in a war with North Korea. Guess what? It would be a nuclear war, and he does have plenty of nuclear capability. In the meantime, I have a very good relationship with him. Different kind of a guy, but he probably thinks the same thing about me. We have a different kind of a relationship. We have a very good relationship, and there's no war.
What has he done? He's legitimized North Korea. He's talked about his good buddy, who's a thug, and he talks about how we're better off. And they have much more capable missiles, able to reach U.S. territory much more easily than ever did before.
You know what, North Korea? We're not in a war. We have a good relationship. You know, people don't understand. Having a good relationship with leaders of other countries is a good thing.
We have a lot of questions to get to.
Your response. Like saying we had a good relationship with Hitler before he, in fact, invaded Europe, the rest of Europe. Come on.
I think I have great relationships with all people. I am the least racist person in this room.
Well, what do you say to Americans who are concerned by that rhetoric?
I don't know. I don't know what to say. I got criminal justice reform done and prison reform and opportunity zones. I took care of black colleges and universities. I don't know what to say. They can say anything. I mean, they can say anything. It makes me sad.
There are 50 former national intelligence folks who said that he's accusing me of is a Russian plant. They have said that this has all the characters. Five former heads of the CIA, both parties, say what he's saying is a bunch of garbage. Nobody believes it except his and his good friend, Rudy Giuliani.
You mean the laptop is now another Russia hoax?
And that's exactly what
is this
that's
where
exactly
you're going?
What
this is
told.
Where he's going. The laptop is Russia, yes.
Gentlemen,
Russia?
I want to stay on the issue of race.
You
okay?
Have to be kidding. Here
Mr.
we go
President?
Again with Russia. I know more about wind than you do. Oh. It's extremely expensive, kills all the birds. It's very intermittent. Got a lot of problems, and they happen to make the windmills in both Germany and China. And the fumes coming up, if you're a believer in carbon emission, the fumes coming up to make these massive windmills is more than anything that we're talking about with natural gas, which is very clean.
All right, that was a montage from the debate last Thursday night, which we didn't get to talk about. Sandy Rios with you, and so happy to be. I'm back from Virginia. Had a wonderful time with the Goochland Tea Party last Thursday night. With Nick, I always want to say the German pronunciation, Freitas, but that's not the way he says it. I think it's Nick Freitas, who's running for Congress in Virginia, did a great job. Bishop Jackson was with us. He was marvelous. We also had a former Navy SEAL who is running again for, this time for Congress, John, I'm just blanking on his last name, but just tremendous, wonderful people. It was such a privilege to be there. And then also we moved to Lynchburg and spoke at a church in Lynchburg, Virginia, on behalf of a candidate who's running for Bob Good down there, who's running for Congress. He's just a really great guy. He was on staff at Liberty for a number of years, and he's in a really tight race with a black physician running on the Democratic side who worked with Barack Obama. And so they have very diametrically opposed views on issues, as you can imagine, but a wonderful, wonderful trips. And we met wonderful people, and that's why you and I didn't get to talk, though, about the debate. I hope that you watched it, because if you haven't, you should go back and watch it. There are so many things to learn in there. I want to highlight a few things. I want to say, first of all, that Kristen Welker, who we had feared would be the worst moderator possible because of her leftist views, really surprised us all. I mean, she set up the questions. Yes, they weren't necessarily friendly for President Trump, but she got out of the way and let the men debate. I'm going to talk about COVID for a second. Two things I took away from this. The president said in this debate, we cannot stay locked down forever. We're going to lose our country. We can't stay locked down. And I, as your president, can't stay in my basement. I have to get out among the people. I have to do my job. I don't have the luxury of staying in my basement like Joe Biden and like most of America. We have to work. We have to get out. We have to get past this. President Trump said we must learn to live with COVID. Vice President Biden, we must learn to die with it. Very different messages, I might say. And then, of course, they went on to the issue of Hunter Biden. Joe Biden says, I never took any money from any foreign government. President Trump said in response, you got $3.5 million from the wife of the mayor of Moscow. That went to Hunter Biden, and we know now because of email that Joe Biden was at the center of all this. And if you don't believe me saying that, I think we should listen to this clip because before the debate, Tony Bobulinski, who is one of the persons copied on the email of the laptop left at the repair store's office, has come forward to say, no, this is true. These are true. And let me tell you what I know. He turned over three of his own phones. He was in business with the Bidens. And this is just a portion of what he said before the debate. Clip five, let's listen.
On May 13, 2017, I received an email concerning allocation of equity, which says 10% held by H for the big guy. In that email, there's no question that H stands for Hunter, big guy for his father, Joe Biden, and Jim for Jim Biden. In fact, Hunter often referred to his father as the big guy or my chairman. On numerous occasions, it was made clear to me that Joe Biden's involvement was not to be mentioned in writing, but only face to face. In fact, I was advised by Gilliar and Walker that Hunter and Jim Biden were paranoid about keeping Joe Biden's involvement secret.
So that's just a part of his statement. The point is, he was there. He was in business with them. This is on record. There is just no denying this. And yet, of course, Joe Biden is insisting. He's not insisting that the laptop's not real, that the email are not real, but he's insisting that he never got any money from foreign governments. That's what Bobulinski said. No, that's just not true. He is the big guy in these email. There was so much money made out of China, out of Ukraine, Uzbekistan, and on the list goes. And they weren't the only ones who got money. The Clinton Foundation was another entity. But I will go into that at greater length on another day. I just wanted to make sure you knew about that. Well, meanwhile, President Trump sat down for an interview with Leslie Stahl of 60 Minutes. And it turned out to be such a disaster for him, or he felt he was so badly treated, and I'm going to give you a little touch of it, that he got up and said, we're done. We're done. This is it. We're done. And I'll give you an idea of, and the president then released, I think, 36 minutes of 60 Minutes. He released that, which is never done. He sat down for 60 Minutes in the White House with Leslie Stahl. He preempted their broadcast Sunday night by releasing what he had experienced with Leslie Stahl and said, look at the bias, hatred, and rudeness on behalf of 60 Minutes and CBS. And so that's what happened. But I want to give you a touch of it. This is Leslie Stahl. She was the guest of the White House. Many of the aides said that she was just so rude from the very beginning. She barked at them for not wearing masks, and yet they caught her on another side of the White House preparing with her staff, not wearing a mask herself. All right, so here's Leslie Stahl interacting with the President of the United States. Let's at least get a taste of this. This is clip four.
I wish you would interview Joe Biden like you interview me. It would be so good. You know what?
I thought you liked it.
I don't mind it. But when I watch him walk out of a store and he's walking with ice cream, and the question the media asks him, what kind of ice cream, what flavor ice cream do you have? And he's in the midst of a scandal.
He's not.
And he's taking...
He's
of course
not.
He is,
no.
Leslie.
Come on.
Of course he is. It's the biggest, second biggest scandal. So, the biggest scandal was when they spied on my campaign. They spied on my campaign,
there's
Leslie.
No real evidence of that.
Of course there is. No. It's all over the place. Leslie,
sir,
they spied on my campaign and they got caught.
Can I say something? You know, this is 60 Minutes, and we can't put on things we can't verify.
You won't put it on because it's bad for Biden.
We can't things we can't verify.
Leslie, they spied on my campaign.
Well, we can't verify
it. It's been
that.
Totally verified.
No.
It's been, just go down and get the papers. They spied on my campaign, they got caught.
No.
And then they went much further than that, and they got caught. And you will see that, Leslie, and you know that, but you just don't want to put it on the air.
As a matter of fact, I don't know that.
Okay.
You know, actually, I believe her. I believe that she's completely ignorant. She's a reporter for CBS News, for heaven's sake. She has been there for, what, 40 years probably, I'm guessing. And she's one of the lead anchors on 60 Minutes, that vaunted show. And she doesn't know that there is evidence that all the agencies of the national security agencies, the deep state, went after President Trump. We know that now. We know that. We know that the Mueller report was, it was just corrupt. We know that, but she doesn't. I really believe she doesn't know. I believe she really doesn't know that Hunter Biden's laptop has been verified. I don't think she knows. I think she's completely ignorant. And so is it any wonder? So she spreads her ignorance to the audience of CBS. And this is how we've gotten into this mess. We have people in major media who are either ignorant. I don't think most of them are. I just think she is. That's my take on it. But willfully lying to the American people. And that takes me to another interaction that happened with with Tucker Carlson. Hunter Tucker. Anyway, with Tucker Carlson just last week. And it is, what's his name? It's Darren Beatty. It's an NBC reporter who is doxing Trump supporters. This is pretty shocking, and I think you should at least get a touch of this. Let's play clip two.
She wrote for her fellow journalists a manual, a doxing manual, detailing her methods for fellow journalists who failed the same ethics class. One of the sponsors of her doxing manual on how to ruin Trump supporters' lives by uncovering their personal information is Bellingcat, an organization funded by NED and our own government. Taxpayers are funding this.
That's Darren Beatty. You know what? Let's give them a little more touch of this, because he's talking about an NBC reporter who is doxing Trump supporters. She works for NBC. This is for a nefarious purpose. We're not going to play the clip because we're going to run out of time. But I want you to know that I have another source, which maybe tomorrow we'll get into this, of the attempts that, Black Lives Matter and Antifa have access now to the personal information of Trump supporters. And they are planning no good. I can tell you they are planning no good on election day or after election day. They have said in no uncertain terms, if President Trump wins, they're going to disrupt normal life. They want to take down the system. And they certainly want to personally target people like you and like me. You just need to be aware of the dangers and what we are facing. I said to my husband, this may be the last few days, really, week or so, apiece in this country in our lifetime. Because even if President Trump should prevail on Tuesday, Election Day, they have terrible plans for us. The only way to stop this, if he wins by incredible margins, which it's possible, it's not likely because of the corruption of the vote, but it's possible. If he wins outrageous amounts of votes where there's just no doubt, and no matter what, how many ballots they have stacked up, they can't take it back, and then the next step is going to have to be to fire all kinds of people. I understand he is thinking about, or is going to fire Christopher Wray, the FBI director, as well he should, and we're going to have to take the streets back. There's going to have to be punishment. Things are going to have to change. But if he does not win and Joe Biden prevails, this is what's happening. They're going to come after Trump supporters. There will be vengeance. I want to give you some good news. Today, Amy Coney Barrett will be confirmed at, we estimate, about 7 o'clock tonight. The Senate stayed in session all night last night. Boy, that is really something in itself. That's a story. They voted for cloture. They have to do 30 hours of debate, so they're already proceeding with that. Susan Collins of Maine will vote against Amy Coney Barrett. Lisa Murkowski of Alaska said last night she's going to vote in favor, which is a real shock. So this is going to be transpiring today. And as I understand it, Amy Coney Barrett, if things go according to plan and nothing, you know, something does incredible, a bomb isn't dropped on the Capitol, she will take her place in the court tomorrow morning. Isn't that stunning? Listen, coming up next, you're in for a treat, because Alex Skarlatos is someone whose name you might not recognize, but you will hear and know his story when you hear it. He's my guest coming up next. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
What would it be like if every person knew that they were created in the image of God?
After 2 years in the making, American Family Studios proudly presents in His image, delighting in God's plan for gender and sexuality.
There are only two sexes, male or female. If you're conceived with a Y chromosome, you will develop into a male.
In His Image is a documentary featuring life-changing testimonies of former LGBT individuals.
In my most formative years of development of sexuality, I went through a brutal time of sexual distortion, molestation.
Visit inhisimage.movie to register for a free sneak preview.
Well, everybody, welcome to this unboxing video as we unbox my hormone blockers.
In His Image from American Family Studios is coming soon. Visit inhisimage.movie.
You're made in the image of God.
That one of the greatest attacks in America was an attack perpetrated by our very own Supreme Court. That was the legalization of abortion. Now, subsequent to that, there have been 70 million babies slaughtered in the wombs of their mothers. That is more than the entire population of Canada and Australia combined.
Kevin Sorbo of the hit films God's Not Dead and Let There Be Light supports life.
I wanted to invite you to offer your full support for the Ministry of Preborn and its leader, Dan Steiner. The team at Preborn is very focused and very successful at saving preborn babies from abortion.
Join Kevin Sorbo and Preborn in standing for life. By letting a mother see her baby on ultrasound and hear the heartbeat, she'll choose life 80% of the time. For $140, you can help save five babies' lives. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or donate securely at preborn.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
My goal as a teacher is to impart knowledge and then be able then for them to take it and turn it into wisdom. As we teach, I think, okay, 5 years down the road, how will the material that I am teaching them really affect their lives and their careers?
Hi, Todd Starnes here. Truett offers biblically-centered degree programs. Check out truett.edu/starnes. A 16-year-old boy was told by his teacher to remove a Trump 2020 flag from his bedroom wall under the threat of punishment. The student at Colusa High School in California was in his bedroom participating in an online chemistry class when the teacher demanded the flag be taken down. She gave the kid 15 seconds to comply. The student's mother says she doesn't blame the teacher. She blames the school board for not giving clear guidance on what kids are allowed to have in the privacy of their bedrooms. And it's not just in California. A Florida fourth grader was suspended for having a BB gun in his room. The public school crowd seems to be under the impression they can govern how children behave in the privacy of their homes. They actually think they can do a better job of raising your children. Be sure to listen to my national radio show live noon to 3 Eastern or download my free podcast at toddstearns.com.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Soda
dispenser. Alex, shut the heck up.
Shortcuts. Do what you know is right.
We've been chosen for this great work.
I don't know, man. You ever just feel like life is just pushing us towards something, like some greater purpose?
That's the trailer from the movie, The 1517 to Paris. It came out in 2018, and it was the story of three young men who were caught, Americans, who were just having fun. Three boys who were on a train from, or young men, on a train from Amsterdam to Paris when a would-be terrorist was trying to, or wanted to assault the passenger of the train. And so at that point, Alex Skarlatos and his buddies, Spencer Stone and Anthony Sadler did what they could to stop him. And as a result of that, they received medals of honor here, medals in Paris, and they became, as it were, you know, celebrities. Well, that's been, you know, in this day and time when events move so fast, that seems like a very long time ago, but not really. Alex Skarlatos is one of those young men. And the opening to that movie, I couldn't help but think about, to that trailer about, you were called for this moment, might describe what we're going to talk about here with Alec. Alec, thank you, Alex Skarlatos, for joining us this morning. We appreciate it so much.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. That movie, of course, when you make a movie and you played yourself in that movie, you see it so many times. And even though it's something that happened to you, the reason I'm coming at this from the perspective of a musician, that by the time I get in the old days when I got a recording project done, I was like sick of every verse and every line because I'd heard it so much. But does that movie capture accurately what happened on that train, you think?
Oh, it's very accurate. That was one of the advantages of being able to play ourselves in the movie, was the fact that we had a little bit more control over what actually happened, and Clint Eastwood, the director, was very accommodating of our desire to make it accurate, and especially the scene on the train of us fighting the terrorist was, I mean, probably 99% accurate. I mean, we did a very good job of making it accurate. We didn't want it to be fake or anything like that.
Well, let me just say that you had experience in the military. In fact, you were in the Oregon National Guard. You spent 6 months in Afghanistan. You completed a nine-month deployment in Afghanistan with the 186th Infantry Regiment. Did you ever experience anything there that prepared you for, I know you were trained, but did you experience anything in Afghanistan that kind of prepared you for that scary moment on the train?
Nothing directly, I'd say. I mean, it was just a lot of, little things in our life that kind of came to a head. And, of course, we did have some training for other things that happened on the train as well.
All right, so now looking back on that long 2 year, I can hardly believe it's just been 2 years, Alex, since I saw that movie. But looking back on that, the incident happened in 2015. Looking back with your perspective now, how do you think that has changed your life?
Pretty much completely. I mean, it really took my plans and kind of threw them out the window for what I wanted to do with my life. And I've kind of gone down a completely different path. But that being said, I mean, there's a lot of things that hindsight being 2020, it kind of led us up to that moment in our life. And everything that we had done, even our friendships and things we talked about when we were kids, came into play that day on the train.
What did you want to do with your life?
I wanted to get into law enforcement, and that's still something I'm thinking about. But after doing the book and the movie and getting out of the military, I came home and saw that my home state of Oregon was in a lot of trouble, and economically and due to a lot of other things. I'm sure everybody's seen the forest fires going on this year as well. Yes. And it was something that I really wanted to help affect change on, and I ended up deciding to run for Congress, which is what I'm doing now.
Yeah, so that's what we're going to get to here. Let me just say, you know, you are making news now in a different, very different way, and you really are making news. There was a story just a few days ago on Fox. You were on the front page of Fox about the remarkable race you're running and the fact that the, I think it's Cook political reporter has moved your district into lean Democrat to, well, it's moved it in the direction that it could be a toss-up. Now, that doesn't mean the polls are that close, but you're running against someone who's called the Titan of Transportation, Peter DeFazio. He's been there for decades. So this is an uphill battle, but you really are making news, Alec, and I do want to talk about that. But before we even talk about the race more, I want to talk about your state. I want to talk about your state. You know, we have seen so much violence, and it's just on and on and on, you know, especially in Portland. I don't need to tell you. And I just wondered if, did you see this coming? Did you know that your state had been either it's Oregonians who've gone left or it's people coming in from outside? I don't really know which. Did you see this coming?
Not exactly. I mean, we have gone farther and farther left. To be honest, I mean, I moved from California when I was in high school, and I've kind of watched Oregon slowly start to turn into California. And obviously I left California for a reason, so it was something I didn't want to see happen. And that's one of the reasons why I'm running for Congress. I mean, we have gotten progressively more and more liberal. To be fair, I am in the southwestern part of the state, so Portland is not so much of an issue. But as Portland goes, so does the rest of the state. And, of course, seeing everything that's gone on in Portland this year in particular makes me very worried for our future, especially after this election.
Was that like a catalyst for you deciding to throw your hat in the ring in this district?
No, I was already running at that point, but it definitely underscored the importance of the race and this election as a whole across the country.
You know, Alec, I'm on the East Coast, and when I think of Oregon from the D.C. Beltway, I think of, you know, liberal politicians, and I think of other things, but I don't think people really understand, and I want to make sure I say this, that there's really a very strong brand of Christianity out in Oregon, and I happen to know that because I have a very good friend who's been a talk show host out there for a number of years, Georgine Rice. She's just a brilliant woman and musician, and she's on KPDQ. I believe that's in Portland. But also then I want to remind people that Melissa and Aaron Klein were there, the cake bakers who were, I don't know if I could say destroyed, but nearly destroyed by the fact that they would not bake a cake for a gay wedding. And that was all centered in Oregon. And then on our own station on Sunday mornings is a beautiful radio program called Call to Worship. I actually listen to it every Sunday morning. Those all come out of Oregon. Alec, you and your buddies met in one of your buddies. You all went to Christian school for middle school, right?
Yes.
And so that's part of your story. At least that's what was printed about you guys. And I think Clint Eastwood spent some time in the movie talking about that you guys were kind of united by your faith, which is just another sideline that I think people should know about.
I don't think you can look at everything that happened that day on the train, especially with the terrorist AK-47 malfunctioning, everything that put us in that time and place. I mean, even me and Spencer switching seats, everything that kind of came to a head with our past. I mean, Spencer being a trained EMT, I just happened to own an AK-47 and the terrorist had one. I mean, there were so many small things like that that came into play that I don't think you can, it's beyond statistics. And I think that definitely someone or something or God was pushing us to that point in our lives and gave us the right tools to handle the situation. Absolutely.
Okay, this is a question where there's no right or wrong, because sometimes this happens and sometimes it doesn't. Did you feel in that moment, did you feel any knowledge of the presence of God, pray, utter a prayer or anything? Or was it just a reaction to an event?
No, it was just a reaction, honestly. It was really everything kind of, I guess, I realized a lot of that stuff after the event. Again, kind of hindsight being 2020, that we just started to piece together all the coincidences that had happened and just slowly started to realize that there's no way this was all purely coincidental. I mean, like I said, us having the right skill set to handle the situation, how many times we debated changing our plans but didn't, so that we ended up there. We only were in the first class car because the Wi-Fi didn't work in the rest of the train car and we had to move. I traded Spencer's seats. I mean, there's so many things that came into play that put us in that time, place, situation with the right skills to handle it, that it was just far beyond coincidence.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, and also it does seem a little supernatural to me that you're just a great guy from Oregon with great qualifications, but when you were a kid, you didn't think you would be able to run for Congress. And I think that incident, of course, gives you a platform and a reason for people to really understand that you're the kind of guy that really would lay down his life and go to bat. I wonder, are Oregonians energized for this 2020 election, you think?
Absolutely, especially for this race. This is probably the most competitive federal race in the entire Pacific Northwest. So they're very energized about this race and about 2020 in general. We just are really hoping that Republicans turn out this cycle, simply because I don't believe that the Democrats have any motivation to turn out, because Biden's going to win Oregon. There's not very many competitive races, and even the guy that I'm running against is getting reelected to a 17th term. I don't know, regardless of party, no one's going to be excited to elect someone to a 17th term. So I think that as long as Republicans can do pretty good and turn out, we should be fine.
You know, I'm from Chicago, actually, originally. And in my state, you know, the downstate has always been traditionally much more conservative. But Chicago just swallows us up. You know, it's got millions of people. Mm-hmm. And I was raised in downstate, but I lived in Chicago later. As you said earlier about Portland, Portland goes, Oregon goes, as Chicago goes, that's the rest of the state. Is that true? Is there enough population in Portland to overtake the population in other parts of Oregon?
Just about, but that's kind of the interesting thing about Oregon is that it is a little bit closer than maybe Illinois. For instance, the congressional district that I'm running in is considered competitive. North of me is Portland, and east of me is Eastern Oregon, which is very conservative. It's kind of like the Republican base, if you will, for Oregon. So if we can win the 4th, and the 4th congressional district can go Republican on a consistent basis, then we can talk about Oregon going Republican as a whole. And that's our long-term plan, of course.
Okay, well, an obvious question. Would you not say that what you have seen on the headlines and the news every night in Portland, and by the way, I don't know if they're still, the news out here is not covering it as much. Are they still writing whatever they call themselves, what they're doing in Portland, are they still doing it every night, wreaking havoc?
Just about, yes. It's kind of gone out of the news because people have gotten so used to it, and I think they're on like day 150 or something like that, but they are writing just about every night still.
Like, how could the people of Portland be so quiet about that? That's the thing. I don't know if they are or we're just not hearing. Why wouldn't people, like someone somewhere there, rise up and say, you're destroying our city, we're not going to stand for it?
Well, some people are. Unfortunately, not anyone in a position of power that can do anything about it, and that's the real problem. Our governor and the mayor of Portland both have no incentive to stop the riots because, frankly, people rioting are a huge part of the voter base, and of course the people that maybe agree with the riots that aren't actually rioting are a huge part of the voter base, so they really don't want to shut the riots down and anger their base and lose their reelection.
Yeah. Well, all right. My guess is Alec Scarlatta. So when we come back, Alec, you actually have a real firm platform. Just things that you really feel, and I can tell from the way you write about them that you mean what you're saying. You're not like a picked candidate who has no thoughts and views. You have very strong views, and I want to talk about those. If you are interested in Alec's campaign, it's alecfororegon.com, alecfororegon.com. And this is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
A A university professor called Supreme Court nominee Amy Barrett a white colonizer and said she adopted two Haitian children as props. It's sad we've been so conditioned to look for racism that we can't recognize acts of love. The solution for racism is based on loving acts just like this. If we all did what Jesus said and loved our neighbor, racial hatred would disappear. Thanks, Miss Barrett, for showing us what real love is like. I'm Pastor John Miller. Visit me at churchontherock.org.
On the next Today's Issues.
We appreciate hearing from you. If you can send us an email at comments@afr.net.
I pastor a small church, so I have to have a full-time job on the side. When I try to feed the flock, y'all feed me, and I thank God for y'all.
If you want to watch the show live, you can go to Facebook or YouTube. Just type in Today's Issues, and you can also access the stories that we talk about.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues. Weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Go therefore and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. In his October 11th, 1798 address to the Massachusetts militia, John Adams, second president of the United States and founding father, said, "Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other." He understood that in order for the American Constitutional Republic to survive long term, the church in America must make disciples of its populace. An immoral people will always destroy themselves through lawlessness. To think otherwise is to suffer under a grand delusion.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner, or visit the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Physical affection between fathers and their sons, from simple contact to hugs, is critically important to the health of growing boys. According to long-term studies, the more time and physical contact fathers have with their young sons starting in infancy, the deeper and stronger the bond between them. The physical engagement of fathers, from changing diapers to resting on the floor to mere physical and emotional presence, even has an important impact on the brain development of their sons. Keep the momentum rolling through adolescence by reading the Boy to Man book with your son when he turns 12. I've written this book for you, dads, to help you impart the wisdom of Solomon to your son on his journey to manhood. Order your copy today at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Everyone is getting into the act of trying to influence next week's elections. Iran and Russia have used cyber means to interfere. Their activities, however, pale by comparison with the multifaceted and aggressive efforts of communist China. Democratic partisans are using a variety of techniques to alter outcomes. So are mainstream media, whose preferences for Democratic policies and candidates over those of the Republican Party are unmistakable. The same has been increasingly evident in the social media as well. A new documentary called The Social Dilemma presents influential industry figures describing sophisticated algorithms used to addict and subliminally manipulate its users. Clearly, such techniques can advance the tech giants' leftist agenda, and it seems certain they will be employed for that purpose, probably dwarfing the impact of all the other would-be influencers. They may finish off free and fair elections for good. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Oregon values, family, hard work, caring for others. Oregon values turn up all over the world.
Breaking news tonight, the takedown on the train.
Three people have been reported wounded.
A knife-wielding man armed with an AK-47 on the loose inside.
I just looked over at Spencer and said, "Let's go."
Roseburg Army veteran Alex Carlatos stood up and stopped a terrorist on a Paris-bound train. Those are Oregon values. Alex Carlotto saved hundreds of passengers that day. He served his country then, and he wants to serve again.
It's time we had a congressman that will serve you, not the extremes in Washington. That's what I will do as your congressman. I will stand with Southern Oregon, the loggers, the veterans, moms, dads, and families trying to make ends meet. And while we have to protect the environment, we must manage our forests or the wildfires will do it for us. Oregon values are my values. Join me and let's stand up for Oregon. I'm Alex Scarlatos, and I approve this message.
Well, it's an amazing story. There should be another movie made about this, but my guest is Alex Scarlatos, who you just heard mentioned, because he is now running for Congress after that fateful meeting with a terrorist on that train from Paris to Amsterdam. He is now running for Congress in his 4th District. He's running against a guy who's been there for decades, Peter DeFazio, and we can talk about that in just a second. But, Alec, you have real positions on real issues. And you mentioned in that spot that's on your website, which is alecfororegon.com, that you have a lot to say about what's happening with the fires out there. And explain that. Do you have some background on logging? And President Trump has made it clear what he thinks. It's just a matter of not managing the forests. But I'd love to hear from you, an Oregonian, what you think about what's happening there.
Well, I have no background in the logging industry or interest in the logging industry. It's simply due to the fact that when we got rid of the timber industry, and there's a lot of complicated laws that went into that, not only did we ruin our economy that was based, of course, on the timber industry, but we ruined the county governments because they receive tax dollars from the timber industry directly. It's a very unique set of laws that govern Western Oregon. And it was really a purely political decision made in Washington, D.C. that ruined an entire way of life for Western and Southwestern Oregon. And it frankly really upset me. And of course, due to our lack of forest management, we now have these massive forest fires that we never had to contend with before. And even this fire season most recently was probably the worst in 100 years. And it was just incredibly frustrating and got me angry enough to want to do something about it, so I decided to run for Congress.
It is sickening, and to see what's happening in California and Oregon, it's just so hard to watch. And I don't know, Alec, are you, of course, California, there are so many homes being destroyed. Now, whether they still are or not, there's so much in the news. Honestly, it's hard to keep up with all the, with everything. So is Oregon suffering as many losses of home and property as I'm not talking about in terms of number, because California is bigger, but proportionately, are homes, is it just open land or homes and property being destroyed, personal homes?
Oh, no, definitely homes and property are being destroyed as well. And a part of the problem is in California, oftentimes the fires burn grass and oak savanna and things like that. They do burn timber from time to time, but the real problem in Oregon is that these fires are burning merchantable timber that has incredible value. And so that's a huge part of why they need to be stopped. This isn't just, you know, this isn't just from a forest management. I mean, it's people's homes and lives as well, but it's also a huge resource to our economy that's being wasted.
Alec, is Oregon shut down like so many other Democratic states? Are you shut down from COVID and people masking and businesses closed? And what's happening there?
I'm a little bit of both, and it kind of depends on what part of the state you're in. Of course, the larger cities tend to be more shut down and take it more seriously, and the rural areas less so. So it's a little bit of both, I'd say.
Yeah. Let me read something from Politico, and this is what it says about your opponent. It says, a titan of transportation on Capitol Hill is facing the toughest reelection battle of his career, and the outcome could impact an early infrastructure push by Joe Biden if the former vice president takes the White House next month. Peter DeFazio, who's been in Congress since 1987 and led Democrats on the Transportation Committee for the past 6 years, is facing a massive fundraising blitz in favor of his GOP opponent, Alec Scarlatos, a 27-year-old best known for his role in stopping a terrorist attack on a train to France. All right, so what can you tell us about, they say that he's a titan of transportation. How do people there view him? Do they see him that way?
Not really, because first of all, people in his district, I mean, they do care about transportation, but there's a lot of other priorities that are ahead of it. And frankly, Peter DeFazio hasn't been able to do anything for his district. Even his own transportation package in his own committee is not going to go anywhere unless the Democrats take the Senate and Joe Biden gets elected to the presidency, simply because it's so liberal and he got no Republican input that no Republican is going to vote for it. And it's unfortunate that it's that partisan and that he's frankly just hoping that the Democrats do that well this election, that he won't have to get any Republican input. But as a result, people in the district kind of view him as a little bit of an extremist and someone who probably has forgotten about the district.
Yeah. You talked earlier about how when you grew up, you thought you might go into law enforcement. And of course, that you got in you ended up in the military and maybe would have gone in law enforcement had this not entered your life running for Congress. And so that affects, I'm sure, how you feel about what's happening to police. And just say a word about that, Alec.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I have many friends that are in law enforcement, and some of them have actually responded to the riots in Portland. And seeing not only the defund the police movement, which is very disturbing as well, but seeing how they use these officers to, you know, they have to do their job in some capacity, but then they won't let them actually stop the riots for good or hold the people that are being charged for rioting. And as a result, the law enforcement officers see the same people out on the street day after day, and they're really being used as almost like human punching bags. They just have to stand there and defend a building, but they're not exactly allowed to go out and actually stop the rioting either.
It's
incredibly frustrating.
It's terrible. Alec, my husband is a former FBI agent, so you could imagine the shrieking. We have two things to shriek about, not only the treatment of the police, but the behavior of the current FBI. So we have to establish order in this country. This is just, this just will not do if we're going to survive as a nation. I know that you, I'm guessing, but I might be wrong, but I'm going to guess anyway. I'm guessing you might be Greek in origin. Is that right?
Yes, I'm a quarter Greek.
A quarter. All right. Well, it's like I was married to a Puerto Rican man, and my children, I always say they are, my grandchildren are Puerto Rican. So anyway, so you are part Greek, and did your parents, so who immigrated here, and do you still have some connection with your Greek past?
I do. That's kind of a long story. Basically, my grandfather on my dad's side was a Greek resistance fighter, got captured by the Germans, deported to Germany to work in a boot factory where he met my grandmother, and they had my dad in Germany, who's, of course, half Greek, half German, and then they all came to the United States right before the Iron Curtain fell, I believe, in 55.
Wow.
And that's the story.
So that's part of what, but that's important, actually, because that's a huge part of what makes you. I'm sure that you grew up probably hearing stories about what things were like in Germany, what things were like, and, you know, without freedom, you know, Greece is, I don't know if they consider themselves a communist country, but they are, at least they were when I was there, off the rails, socialist country, very close to communism. So I'm sure you have a lot of stuff you've picked up from your family. So that brings me to, of course, your position on immigration, because people assume, you know, we're a nation of immigrants, so we should be in favor of allowing everyone to come in. I want to know what your feeling is about the American immigration system.
Well, as long as it's safe and legal, I mean, I have no problem with it. It just needs to be, we need to know who's coming into this country. I mean, massive amounts of immigration, really not being vetted, was part of what caused the terrorist attack on the train to Paris back in 2015. And in the United States, I mean, of course, we have this huge porous border. We really need to actually control who's coming into this country and the amount of people coming into this country, and it should fluctuate with our economy. Obviously, my father was an immigrant here as well. I don't believe in shutting off all immigration, just as long as it is what's necessary for economic growth and as long as it's safe and legal.
This reminds me of that story that's in the news now about the teacher in Paris who was beheaded by a 17-year-old, I think, jihadi. And the response of the Parisians right now and the people in France is they're now trying to find all these people who are living in France who have been cheering, who cheered for this and thought this is a great idea, and they're trying to deport them. And I think that kind of puts in focus, Alec, what you're talking about. We can't just allow anyone in indiscriminately. People don't have a right to enter other people's countries just because they want to. We have to be very careful. And so I'm with you on that. You have some very interesting endorsements, and I want to mention that you have endorsement by the leadership of the House. That's the Kevin McCarthy and Steve Scalise, the House of Representatives. But you also have endorsements from people that I feel that are good friends of mine, Tom Cotton and Ted Cruz, and also Michael Waltz, who I think is such a hero. He's a veteran himself, and he's dynamite when he appears and all the things he's doing in Congress. And then I want to add a couple more. Stephen Moore, who's a frequent guest, good friend. And then, all interestingly enough, Art Laffer, who was the economic advisor to Ronald Reagan. Now, that's for the people that are Reaganites, that's a pretty big endorsement, Alec.
Well, we're pretty happy with our endorsement list overall. We've had a ton of support and a bunch of advice from not only GOP leadership, but people I admire on a personal level as well. And one of whom, of course, is Art Laffer. So we're pretty thrilled with all of the fantastic endorsements we've been able to get.
You know what? I left out Dan Crenshaw. Dan's one of my favorites. I just was with him in South Dakota, not officially with him, but sitting next to him in South Dakota when the president went out there for the July 3rd. And he's just such a hero, and he's endorsing you too, which I think is notable. Alec, we're going to run out of time here, but if people wanted to, you know, people don't have to be from Oregon or from other states. They can help in other ways. So what is your campaign? It sounds like you're doing well with money. What does your campaign need?
Well, yeah, like I said, we're actually one of the few House races in the country that's still actually gaining momentum, not losing it. So we're very excited about the opportunity this November. But we really just need word on the street, people to be talking about us. We need volunteers. We still do need donations, of course. And if you'd like to ask us a question or volunteer or donate, you can go to alecfororegon.com, A-L-E-K-F-O-R, oregon.com. Thank you.
All right. So Alec, okay, you did that very well. Isn't that weird to have to do that after being a private citizen? Somebody asked, they wanted me to run for Senate in Illinois and challenged Dick Durbin a number of years ago. And the general conclusion was that I could never pull that off. I could not ask for money, and I could not bend. I'm really bad about bending. But Alec, if you make it into Congress, if you win this race against Peter DeFazio, what's the first thing that you would love to accomplish?
Honestly, responsible forest management. I mean, I would love, I know you have a national audience, and I'd love to say something catchy that everybody understands, but really I'm running for the issues in my district in Oregon's 4th Congressional. I mean, that's the number one priority and the number one thing facing a lot of these smaller communities. But I will say that due to what I survived in the middle of a gun-free continent, the Second Amendment's incredibly important to me as well, and I'll always protect that.
Second Amendment. I also need to ask that you I need to add that you are endorsed by Oregon. It's not Right to Life. It's got another name, but it's a Right to Life organization in Oregon has your endorsement as well, which I'm sure tells us something about your position on unborn human beings. Alec Skarlatos, we wish you all the best, and I really appreciate you joining us this morning. God bless and keep you as he has so far, because the nation needs men like you. So thank you. Sadie Rios in the morning on AFR Talk. We'll be right back.